Hey everyone, and welcome back to the Weekly Awakening Podcast. It's your host, Colleen, and I'm super excited to bring you guys another interview episode after having a whole summer of no interview episodes. I know I needed that little break, and please excuse my voice. It's a little crackly. I lost it last week, and I'm just slowly getting it back. So let's jump into this interview. I'm super excited. This summer, I somehow on the internet, I found a book, and it was called From the Moment We Met. It like came up in something that someone suggested online for me to read, and I grabbed it and I said, oh my God, this book is amazing. I love the author. And I started to look him up, Brian Clark. And as he will say, he had nothing on social media. So I had to go to his website. I found him and I reached out. I said, hey, can I interview you? I didn't think he was going to get back to me, but here we are and I'm super excited. Say hi, Brian Clark.
Hi, Brian Clark, but hello to you, Colleen.
You're funny. You're over in Tasmania. Now, where is that? For those of you who don't know, most people probably do know.
Tasmania is at the bottom of the world. And it's that island that's just south of the big island of Australia. And we call ourselves the edge of the world. And the people that live here, we call ourselves Tasmaniacs. Or Taswegians. But It's a quiet little place, and it's like it was maybe 20, you know, the world the way it was 20 years ago.
I love that. It's like kind of a little hidden secret. So you said, so what's the winter like there?
Well, we get really difficult winters now. I'm going to have to translate because we use Celsius, but let's say the in the middle of winter, it'll be like 30 degrees at night, and then during the day I'll go up to about 60, 58 or so.
Oh, well, that's so pretty nice. Yeah, that's not a bad winter.
No, it's not bad. I'm from Canada originally, so let's say it's better than that.
Wow. So what brought you to, because first Australia, I mean, not to sound like this is a silly question, but Tasmania is part of, or is it separate from Australia?
No, it's part of Australia. One of the states in Australia. We do feel separate here, but I've only lived here now for the last 5 years. I was on the mainland in Melbourne.
Well, what brought you to the end of the world, the edge of the world?
I'm sorry?
What brought you to the edge of the world?
The edge of the world. Well, it was that time of life, you know, the tree change, sea change, to come to Tasmania. So I was in my late 60s and I transitioned to a more quieter life, but I wouldn't say it's quieter at all.
Those Tasmania devils running around?
Yeah, there are. Yep.
But you had said, we were talking earlier, and he said they were very nice.
Well, they are. They just hiss at you. You wouldn't pick them up, those Tasmanian devils, but you know, they're there and they're very nice. And there are, of course, state's animal.
Oh, okay. But you don't want to pick them up, but they won't attack.
No.
So let's jump into this astrology, because as if you read your website, it is, and tell me again your website so everyone on here knows.
It's www, obviously, and we're called Astro Synthesis. So that's one word, Astro, A-S-T-R-O, and then synthesis.com.au. And yes, I try to put on that website a lot of, you saw those student resources. There's a lot of articles for people to read.
Yeah. And so you founded this, your collection, your syllabus, you can talk a little bit more. I'd love to know, in 1986, you went to Australia and like, is that where your astrology career began?
Oh, no. My astrology career. I started studying astrology when I was in my early 20s. And it was 1973.
Oh, wow.
When I read my, I already knew about astrology beforehand, but I had lived in London and been exposed to that in 1970, 71. But in 1973, I read a book by Isabel Hickey called Astrology, a Cosmic Science. And it told me about another way of looking at astrology from a much more symbolic, soulful perspective. And I was already interested in all kinds of things at that time, like yoga and spiritualism, and things were happening. And I found astrology to be a more, let's say, a tool that I was able more to feel comfortable with, because you know, I had lots of impressions going on inside me, but when I looked at a horoscope, I'd be able then to say, oh, those are the archetypal resonances that I'm feeling. I'd be able to match it with something outside of myself.
Wow. I know. And that's how I kind of, so that's how I kind of feel. And that's really got me started. And it's amazing how it's all lined up. And it's, what do you say to people? And I don't know why I'm jumping right into this question, but some people may be listening to it that say, hey, like, I don't understand how the planets can be connected to our daily life.
Well, that's a big question, Colleen. So, but let me give it a stab.
Yes.
When I first started astrology, I had a very different impression than I do now. So all these many, many years later, after many, many clients, students working with astrology, it's not a cause effect relationship. We don't, it's not because Jupiter is just now gone back into Aquarius that this is happening. It's not a cause effect. There's something about the symbol. The symbols, that when we engage with symbols, they have a kind of sense of, you know, affect upon us. By that, what I mean, there's a kind of a sense that we start thinking about a symbol, we start thinking about what that might mean, we start conceptualizing it, and memories and feelings and all that start to arise. And that's when the kind of wheel turns and we get more, I guess, insight into that. So one of the great dilemmas of people starting to study astrology is that they see it as this means that. So I'm always deconstructing with students the idea that because they have this aspect, that's what this means in their life. They tend to project their life onto the chart rather than letting the chart reveal to them about their life. But we have to learn, and we have to go through all of that kind of confusion in many ways about what astrology is, to really hear it speak to us. And I guess what you'll see, even as I'm speaking now, I can't find the right words to explain that to you.
You're doing a pretty good job.
It a mystery. I'm sorry?
I said you're doing a pretty good job.
Well, it's very difficult, Colleen, to try to explain, because astrology isn't about explaining something. It's about revealing something.
Wow.
Can only be revealed if we start to approach it in a different way. Like if we turn it upside down to look at the bottom side of it rather than just seeing the upside of it, or if we look at it a different way. So there's many, many different ways to think about astrology. And that's where I guess I came to, like, about my last book called Soul Symbol and Imagination was my looking back on all the years I spent with astrology, because I now had time to understand what went on with me. You know, I sat with so many clients, and things happen that are beyond words, just beyond words.
Is there a story that comes to your mind, or a moment?
Well,
that comes
I just
to
had
your
a
mind?
Story this week with a client. Yes. I will just say this about it: there a very difficult relationship with her daughter who. She hadn't spoken to for some time, many years, and a regular client. And in speaking to her, something changed as we were speaking. And within 24 hours of our consultation, her daughter phoned her out of the blue. Now, that's just one example of many things that happened. It wasn't because I did her chart. It wasn't because I said anything. It was a kind of moment in time with astrology that you enter into this space between worlds. And if you hold all that in a sacred space, I do feel that magic happens. We don't make it happen. It just happens. And I think it happens because we have the right attitude and the right, you know, the right approach to it.
Yeah. And it's almost like a sense of letting go, right? Letting go of this world and being open and sort of letting go of our pain or whatever it is that is holding us back and just being open for a free flowing message.
Yeah, absolutely. It's being open to, it's not letting our opinions and worldviews and the temporal world that we live in, you know, this very temporal, literal world, not letting that dictate the reality of our experiences, because so many of us have experiences beyond this world.
Yeah, we really do. We really do. Now, what came first? Did you start your school? Did you start teaching first, really? Or did you start like working with clients first?
Well, I started working with clients first. And then, and this was way back, I guess.
Was this in Canada or Australia?
In Canada. So my first paying client would have been, I think, probably about 1978.
Oh, my God.
And then shortly after I started teaching, that was in Canada. And then I did, living in Canada, I went a lot to the States. And I was on a cruise. I was invited to speak on an astrology cruise with a group of astrologers. And I had been also invited to go to Australia the next year. But ironically, on that cruise was a woman from Australia who I am now married to for the last some years.
Wait, and so she was from Australia?
She was from Australia. So that's how...
And she was an astrologer? And she's an astrologer as well?
Yeah, she is an astrologer as well and a family therapist. So that's how we formed our school. And we created our school then, which lasted for a good Saturn return. When I say lasted, it was time to let the structure go, because the internet had come along, and we had face-to-face classes every week.
Wow.
For all those years, we had first year, second year, third year, fourth year program.
Wow.
We had a center which had a psychologist, a naturopath, a dream therapist, and astrology. Yeah, it was called the Chiron Center, and it was a very vibrant school and meeting place in Melbourne for all those years.
For how many years was it there?
Well, we started in 1986, and in 2015, we had our closing ceremony.
Wow. Wow. Oh, my gosh. There's
so
many people.
29 years, isn't it?
That's a Saturn return right there. Wow.
That's a Saturn return.
How did you feel with closing it? Did you feel ready, sad? Like, I'm sure a mix of emotions, I'm sure.
Well, it was. Thank you for asking. I've got chills now, because if you can imagine, for 29 years, we had a space where every week, students would come and they'd walk in the door and feel that they could talk about all the things they could never talk about. Plus, and that was matched with, we had dream groups. And as I said, we had the naturopaths do the health classes, and we had all kinds of classes. So when we closed, it was quite beautiful, because a lot of the older students came back. And of course, you form all these relationships through the years with people. You're part of their life. And what they always appreciated is that the moment they walked into the center and closed the door, they were in a space that honored something that didn't get honored in their daily life. And that was always highly, highly comforting and quite moving. And so I feel enormously enriched, rewarded, acknowledged for having had that life and that opportunity.
Aww.
I feel quite emotional saying that, but it was a great gift that astrology gave me.
Aww, that's beautiful. And I bet you and your wife and everyone else there was a beautiful, magical gift that you gave to everyone else.
Well, there's always that sense of... there's a sense of you get back sometimes what you give,
Yeah.
And, and vice versa. I was touched in many ways by many of the students
and
my colleagues. Enormous.
Aww.
I'm sorry.
Continue. I was just going to say, you're still online though. Is everyone still online? Are all the colleagues together or?
What happened as I moved to Australia, I still had all my regular clients. I kept, I have many regular clients. I still have a lot of students in we had our distance learning program. And so they were still finishing up their certificates and diplomas, and they're still doing that. I mean, it takes nearly 7 years for the students to finish their diploma.
Wow.
And because there's all kinds of study and work, and they write a thesis and so on. And so I had that. And then I have also tutorials that I do for students overseas, that are studying another. And so Zoom came along, and it just got as busy as ever.
It changed the whole world, right?
You in Philadelphia.
It's amazing. Yeah. It's amazing.
It is amazing.
I can't believe it. So Real quick, I just want to circle back because you said astrology cruise. That sounds amazing.
Well, you know, I was lucky in the 80s and 90s. There was sort of a wave of astrology, and we had all kinds of conferences, and this conference was on the cruise.
Oh my God!
I've been on three of them. You know, this was in the Bahamas, so I met Glennis, my wife, as the ship left New York.
Really? What did you guys just like run into each other and you saw a beautiful woman and you said hello? Well, or
I knew I was going to Australia, and the person who had arranged it said, "Oh, you must meet this person." And so there we were, we met, and we sailed into the Bermuda Triangle. You have to make a romantic story about it, but that was that. Yeah.
Well, you came out of the Bermuda Triangle together, so that's good.
Well, it took a while. It wasn't an instant kind of. It was a growing thing.
How do you?
So then I came to Australia.
And then you came. Oh, how do you guys like daily track the planets for yourselves in your own life?
Oh, that's a very good question. Well, basically, it's more tracking the kids and the grandkids. I don't daily track. You know, I after a while, it feels like the rhythms are in you. Mm. I don't daily track. Like, well, I do now because Venus is setting at night. So I go out just after sunset and watch beautiful Venus set. And then an hour later, I can look up and see Jupiter and Saturn in the sky. So I don't track that in terms of what it might mean for me. I track it in terms of, you know, if I need to consult something in myself, I'll reflect on it.
Yeah.
But no, I don't daily track. I like to keep my journal. I keep a Mercury journal, which I just write in it, and then I go back and check to see what happened during the cycle of Mercury.
I was going to say, so are you just, because I should probably do that, and we talked in the emails being very Mercury ruled, so do you just kind of track your mind through Mercury every month?
Yeah. Well, I just write in the journal, like when it's a Mercury journal, so I'm writing more my ideas, kind of like what happened, synchronicities, that kind of thing. But then I go back and check to see what happened during the cycle that month. That's I just do it in terms of not trying to match something, but trying to understand the cycle, you know, trying to understand this cycle. It's a wonderful cycle of Mercury Sun, you know, and its movement.
And it's, I love that. Now, do you guys, so you do track your children and grandchildren a lot?
Well, when you say track, it's interesting. I don't track to see what's, you know, we look at, you know, when there's those major transits, we're always there, but we're there. And so when they phone and you sort of got a little bit more, ammunition on your side. So
yes, you do.
But, you know, I see astrology, as I said, as more of a revelatory tool rather than the kind of, I don't tend to force a kind of interpretation on anyone, or, you know, I see it more as something that one can discuss. So I think astrology helps me ask the right questions.
Mm, you know? I love that.
So it helps me ask the right questions for people so that they can then have the answers in themselves.
Wow. Wow. I love that. How far are you booked out now for readings or with clients?
Well, again, as I said, I only take my, regular clients now. And that keeps me busy enough because as I said, I have students and tutorials. With new clients, it's very difficult because, you know, you have to establish a relationship. My kind of work in astrology is based a lot on that sense of establishing that rapport rather than me sitting there with a chart telling them about something. I try to listen. I think that's one of the greatest skills. And until I hear something that resonates in the chart and then we speak. I think that many people in astrology haven't yet learned that your subjective self, that subjective part of you, that which you know, is really brought to the table in an astrological consultation. So I rarely take on new clients these days.
Yeah.
So how far am I booked? Well, I have my regular. So every week, you know, I have my diary. Yeah.
Ah, so now again, I read the book. So from the moment we met, was your, you know, how you started to really look at the synastry and the relationship dynamics in astrology, was that brought on with your wife and just like seeing how you two came together in marriage and how you went through life, or what really, you know, triggered you to write that?
Well, look, at synastry was one of the things. It won't surprise you to know I have four planets in Libra, so I think so. You know, relationships have always been part and parcel of who I am. And
yeah,
ever since I started studying astrology, as you would, you know, once you start, you realize, oh my goodness, you know, how come I've got all these Capricorn friends in this particular time of my life, or why have I got this, or how come I'm always relating to people with their moon in Scorpio? You know, so we tend to always have at the beginning a kind of a sense of, at least I did, of interaction with people of certain types, so
yes,
to speak. And that's sort of, and of course, in my own relationship and my own understanding of myself, I wrote that. And I call it From the Moment We Met because it was about adult relationships. You know, sometimes synastry gets lumped in with family relationships. I'd already written a book called The Family Legacy. So that sort of predates this. And it's all about family, you know, and family dynamics of family, kids and so on. And this is more thinking about the adult relationship.
Oh, okay. And how, okay. What fascinates you a little bit more? The relationships, or probably maybe it's both the same, but different, like the relationships we have with our love partners or the relationships we have with our family dynamics.
Well, both are interrelated, aren't they?
Yeah, they are.
You know, like, even though we don't want to admit it, family really influences the way that we're going to
love.
Approach our love and relationship, absolutely. So I found that in my consultations, one of the strongest themes was family dynamics, you know, the family legacy, the imprint. And so that I had so much experience, especially siblings. The first book I ever wrote was called Astrology and Psychology of Siblings. That was in 1999. That was published by Penguin. And I had lots and lots and lots of sibling stories in my consulting practice and also family stories. So it was like I had heard a lot of stories and matched them to the horoscope. And so I found that fascinating. And then I match that, of course, with the sense of the adult relationship. Very interested, too. I don't know if you got to the chapter about people meeting, you know, the times people meet one another. I'm fascinated by that as well.
Yeah. Can you talk a little bit more about that? I want to talk about that.
Well, I just thinking now I should go back and look at that first email you sent me.
Look, I have your, I did bring up the emails a little bit. I did.
Okay. So what's so interesting is, I found that when people meet, you know, like if you think about meeting, it's like paths crossing, isn't it? It's like paths crossing.
Yeah.
My path crossed with Glances at that moment in time. Why?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know why. Do we ever know why? But if we think about the horoscope, the paths in the horoscope to me are really about the angular relationships, you know? Mm-hmm. And I would include the nodes in that.
You would?
Because the nodes, yes, because we can think of the ascendant, descendant, and midheaven IC also as nodes, because nodes mean the interaction or crisscrossing of two planetary orbits. So what we have then with the ascendant, descendant, and MCIC, I use the vertex, antivertex, and the nodes. Those are all paths in the horoscope. And so I've often found at times these very interesting meetings and important meetings that there are crossing of those angles between the two charts or important planets on these angles.
When we're meeting, right? When we meet someone important in our life,
transit.
Our partners.
Or for instance, you know, if we looked at that moment of meeting, you know, perhaps, you know, my ascendant is on your vertex, or there's a major transit to my ascendant or descendant or node. The nodes are very important.
The nodes are, yes, yeah. Why are they important?
Well, because the nodes talk very much about that you know, that intersection zone between the path of the sun and the ecliptic and the path of the moon. So you have the sense of the paths of spirit and soul, you know, Wow. And so they become very important. They hold a resonance of a very deep sense of how we live out our spirit and soul in temporal time. When I say temporal time, I mean the literal world. Wow. So the nodes represent a lot of that.
Wow. What do you have? Do you have a favorite planet? So is your favorite planet Venus?
My favorite planet, I would have to say, is Mercury.
Me too.
Like I have Venus and Scorpio square Pluto. Oh. So I'm not going to talk about my Venus, but I'll talk about my Mercury.
Some darkness there. No. Yeah. Let's talk about your Mercury.
Well, my Mercury is retrograde, and it's conjunct the moon and Neptune and the South Node, and it rules my ascendant. So I think that little glimpse talks about my interest in the imagination, my interest in symbols.
Was anyone in your family into astrology before you, like your parents or anything?
No, but no, not at all. But in terms of my family having Pluto on the IC, there was, I don't know if I call it a secret, but I grew up knowing I really had a grandfather, my father's father. I knew his mother had died when he was 16, and there's a big story in the family, but eventually he found my father after many, many years. And I learned from that link to my grandfather that he had these sisters who had been, what were they, great aunts, who were spiritual mediums.
Wow.
And that made great sense to me because I had always been interested in spiritualism, and I had actually, you know, been to many, many spiritualist churches in my day when I was very young. And then later in life, I found out, yeah, that I had this ancestry in England.
Wow, that's fascinating. Are you still very, you know, very spiritual now? I mean, it is related to the planets, but do you have a daily practice with your spirituality, anything?
I wouldn't say a daily practice. No, I think part of my daily practice is just reflection.
Yeah.
Writing my dreams, following my dreams, being more reflective, taking a walk every day with my dog. That's my meditation. Yeah.
That's it. That's absolutely meditation. That's amazing. Yeah. Now, do you have a favorite book that you wrote? So we have a few here, The Sibling Constellation.
Oh, you know, writing such a, like most of the books that I've written have been from all my student notes. So the book that you read from the moment we met is based on all my student notes from teaching all those classes all those years.
Wow.
But if I were to say, is there a favorite book I've written, it would have been The Soul, Symbol, and Imagination, The Artistry of Astrology, because that's more reflective. That's my reflections back.
That's going to be my next one I read of yours.
I'm sorry?
That's going to be the next one I read of yours.
Oh, well, I'd be interested in your views of that. But I reflected back on my time in astrology, that because it gave me my living, it gave me my livelihood, and it gave me my passion, really.
Yeah. Oh my God, I love that. Now I want to circle back and talk about a Saturn return, because some people are listening and they hear me talk and they're saying, what's a Saturn return? What's a Saturn return? I had my first Saturn return. I'm 33. So I like to say I came out of it, you know, it was a couple years, and I came out of it whenever Saturn left Capricorn. And so for me, it was like the biggest, I felt like I came in and I saw the karma. I came in with my family, the lessons I needed to learn through, you know, generational karma through various things. And I almost feel like I mastered a big test. I mastered, like, okay, I grew, I thrived, I went through a lot of pain, and now I came out the other side, and I'm ready to, like, be who I am today.
Wow, yeah. Well, the Saturn return, first of all, I think we must acknowledge that all planets return. Every planet has a cycle, so every planet returns. We don't necessarily think about, well, we think always about our solar return because that's our birthday.
Yep.
And I always encourage people to think about that. But the moon returns every month and so on. These returns become very, very instinctual to us. The Jupiter return at 12 and 23 and, you know, 36. And so those are very important. But your Saturn return, you're absolutely right. Why? Because Saturn represents that sense of the edge of the solar system. He is the god of, like I like to say, temporal time, the god of literal time. He's a god of structure. He's the god, really, isn't he?
Yeah. I like to call him the grandfather god.
Yeah. He's a god in the astrological pantheon that does represent that. So, you know, he talks about aging and maturing, and therefore the first return is like an initiation into great maturity, as you've just described.
Yes, oh my God.
And there's
yes.
a sense of maturity, and he makes those three cycles in life, three really, you know, important cycles. And that first cycle, you know, the sense of learning, because your next cycle that you're in now, Colleen, isn't it? It's yeah. going to take you all the way to the end of the 50s.
Oh my
it's
God.
Really about building your life. It's about building your life in the world.
Yes.
It's about parenting, not just your own children, but your own creative force. It's about structuring your life. It's no longer that Saturn now is in you. You know, you've had that one cycle of it. So it's
wow.
embedded now in the sense of process. You know about consequences, you know.
Wow.
You know about what happens if you do this. So it is this building stage. And so it becomes very, very important. I'd like to say, if I may, we tend to have a negative view of Saturn and Pluto and these kind of planets. None of the planets are there to give us a bad time.
No, they're not.
Some of the planets are basically talking about, you know, the more difficult aspects of human nature. And Saturn talks about that sense of, yeah, having to actually do work.
Yeah. And that's so perfect. And what you described afterwards, that literally is how I felt when I started to come out of my Saturn return. I really felt like, wow, I'm an adult now. Even though I'd been long on my own for a long time, like I really could not believe like how much maturity had happened in myself. You know, so much of that inner child had grown and matured. And I felt like, okay, I'm an adult now.
Well, yes. So tell me, I'd like to ask you, when you use the word mature, because that's a perfect word for Saturn, can you describe to me, give me another image for that or
yeah, like where did I mature my experience?
Yeah.
So the long story short, and people that have listened to my podcast know a little bit about this. So I have Saturn, you know, so Capricorn, it rules my fifth house, and I have Saturn in that house, and then I actually have Mars in my house of marriage, okay, in Pisces. And since I came in, I was a little girl. My parents were divorced. They got divorced when I was young, but they lived across the street from each other. And then my dad got married a few times, and I never really saw relationships sort of succeed. And that became a very, very big driving force in my mind. And I started to seek out, like I was always obsessed with trying to find a partner or love, and especially around saving. I feel like that's that Pisces in the marriage house. And I had this wrong idea. So I'd seek people out in love. And so I married someone after 2 months, not the father of my children. That was long gone. I mean, we're good friends, but that was over with. I can't get into the description of what happened, but about a year later, the craziest like thing that you would never imagine happened came from it. And I was going through it by myself. And during that time is actually when I started the podcast. So I couldn't sleep. Oh, there you are. I can see you now, finally. I couldn't sleep. I couldn't do anything. So I would write. And I started to, so funny, because the fifth house too, it like all of a sudden I started the podcast. I started all this creative journey. That's when I actually took astrology serious and like started to reach out and started studying it with someone. I started to do all this stuff. And then I actually, like, I was always a relationship jumper. So I got out of this marriage. And from that, I just like was a brand new person. Not only did my creative endeavors grow from that, like you said, so you said about creative, but I was so grown up. I had finally seen, you know, how I was, the people I was going after. Like, I just learned that master lesson, okay? You know, like, I just learned and really learned a real depth of what love was versus what, like, my inner child was seeking it for. If that makes sense. The cliff notes.
Totally. But one of the things, of course, one of the phrases you used was going through it by yourself. And that's part of the Saturn initiation, you know, which of course is going to be very difficult for someone with Mars and Pisces on the descendant. But going through it by yourself, you know, one because you can think about that Mars too as your sense of individuality. You know, Mars being in Pisces in the seventh house, your individuality was oftentimes, you know, perhaps dispersed into the world through others.
Yeah.
And of course, going through it by yourself, then you find perhaps more of a kind of individual approach to a sense of not just creative expression from the fifth house, but the Mars and Pisces, which allows you to, like you so easily right away said to me, well, we'll just see what happens. What are we going to talk about? Well, we'll just let it all happen. You know, that's part of your natural creative process. But of course, that has to be held within a structure.
It does.
Yeah.
And I'm learning that, and I even with the podcast or emails, getting back to that kind of structure is definitely something I'm learning. And I learned how to structure in my life and how to kind of like be adult. And it's so funny you said that there was so much pain, and I couldn't escape it. I had to face it because I knew I was facing myself and my own, for lack of a better word, defects. You know, my patterns, whatever it was, and I couldn't. No one could save me but me. And that, you're right, that's so Saturn. No one could save me but me.
Yeah. But also too, you know, you preface this at the beginning too with, of course, the family dynamic, which of course is always there. And and as we sift and sort through these things, we oftentimes learn that part of the pain too is ancestral. You know, it's continuing. You know, part of the maturity of Saturn is to realize that I don't know whether we can always break the pattern, but we can actually be aware enough of the pattern not to get caught in it again. And you know, that's all part too of not repeating those cyclical patterns.
Wow. Which is hard and painful, but I can tell you I'm pretty good right now. I'm doing pretty good not repeating those patterns and growing up there. Now, I want to talk a few things, you know, as this is a good interview. We still got a little bit and then we'll finish it out here. But I want to go into, because you're right, everyone's kind of obsessed with the Saturn return and not really obsessed with any of the other returns. We don't even talk about the solar return, but I want to talk about and hear your take on the Jupiter return.
Oh, well, that's a very big one for me, because Jupiter to me defines, you know, a lot of the seven stages of life. So if you think about the Jupiter return, now Jupiter, we say 12 years, it's really 11.8, but let's not get bent out of shape. But as you get older, you know, it's not 48, it's 47 when it returns and so on.
Okay.
So every 12 years, just think about that now, every 12 years, Jupiter returns. What is Jupiter? Jupiter is that kind of sense of calling to a world beyond what we are aware of. It widens the horizons of our life. It's encouraging us to step beyond the boundaries and perimeters of our thinking and ways of being. So if you think about the first Jupiter return at 12, you sort of go to high school, you know, there's a whole different shift. Up until the first Jupiter return, you've been in a classroom with everybody the same age who's got the same Jupiter, you know?
Yeah, wow.
So and then at 12, some kids get left behind and so on, some move forward. At the next Jupiter return, 23 to 24, you're ready to sort of launch yourself in the world and so on. So every Jupiter return is like an invitation into the university of life. You know, it's like an invitation to learn more than you know, to go beyond the opinions that you've gathered, to actually go beyond beliefs, to have cross-cultural relationships and experiences that allow you to see the world in a much more unified and a broader way. So it's a conspiracy, I always feel, with Jupiter to take us beyond the limits that we set for ourselves. And so you often see at these ages a lot of just not just educational reform, but people moving, traveling, reaching beyond. So as I said, they form the life cycle. So if you think about this Uranus, 84 years, within 84 years, there's also seven cycles of 12 years, seven Jupiter cycles. On our website, I'm sure there'll be an article about that, because I've done a lot of work on the Jupiter cycle. Actually, if I may, Colleen, be very, very bold. And the new book that I have out is called Astrological Time.
Yes.
And in that, I go into a lot about the Jupiter returns.
Astrological.
So I have a lot of.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of very important. Now, I think you mentioned to me before, I didn't write it down, but you have, am I allowed to say this? You have two children.
Yeah.
And one is just approaching their Jupiter opposition. The other, I think, is just past their Jupiter opposition. So that happens around the age of 6 years old. And that is the first initiation, I think, very importantly, into Jupiter, because it's like the beginning of expansion for the child into, you know, the schools and schooling and new ways of thinking.
Wow.
So the oppositions are also very important, too. 6, 18. And of course, what happens at our Saturn return? We have Jupiter opposition. So Jupiter and Saturn form a dynamic of 20 years. They have a cycle. And so when you will have your next Saturn return at 59, you'll also have your Jupiter return. So when you have your first Saturn return, you have your Jupiter opposition.
Okay, yeah.
So the other thing about that first Saturn return is also when the progressed moon and the progressed sun come back to the very same relationship they had in your natal chart. Your sun is one sign later, and your moon has gone all the way around plus one more sign. So there are many things that happen at that age of 29 and 30 in terms of structuring our world. You know, not just Saturn, the progressed lunation cycle and Jupiter play a big role.
Wow. Wow. And yeah, I mean, with, I think with Jupiter too, and probably says like a, I mean, I'm a pretty faithful spiritual person. So probably like renewed sense of faith coming from the hard times, right? And
absolutely.
And the growth. Absolutely. And the growth from that. Now, what can you say about, you know, the great, what do you expect these next 20 years with the great, you know, Jupiter Saturn conjunction and moving into Aquarius and everything?
Oh my goodness. What do I expect? I'm not one to use the astrology to think about economics or social patterns. Why? Because it's too subjective to me. I can't be objective enough. I can tell you because I deal with individuals. What I'm trying to say is what. There's a difference between expectation and hope. What I would hope with that Jupiter-Saturn new alignment in Aquarius, the beginning of a whole new, you know, air pattern and so on, what I would hope would be a kind of sensible reconciliation of values, you know, human values, to bring back, you know, the sense of human values, the sense of democracy, Aquarius, the sense of union. That's what I would hope. What I expect, because of the way our life has gone on, will be the continuation of these destructive patterns that we see.
Yeah.
Because there hasn't been enough, I guess, ground, you know, grassroots and swelling, it seems, for us to accept that we are the masters here of our own world, you know, and we have to collectively and consciously do something about that. So I can't say much about that.
I agree.
There's a lot of people writing about it, but I tend to think in terms of hope, I guess, with that. I do think Aquarius is a very hopeful sign, but that's not necessarily what will happen given the consciousness of our world.
Do you think that people, like, for instance, let's talk about, like, when someone comes into our timeline, do you think that, okay, so, like, people entered my life at the Great Conjunction, you know, and there's some people that say, oh, well, this will be a theme for the next 20 years. Do you think with that, like, people that come into your life then, they will be there for the next 20 years or something like that?
Well, I don't know if they'll be there for the next 20 years, but what they will, but their resonance will be there. Their resonance definitely will be there, you know, because... Yes, when we're affected by those big conjunctions, that resonates in us. It affects us. It changes us. It evokes something that we work with. You know, something is brought to consciousness, and hopefully, once it's conscious, it doesn't become unconscious again.
Yeah. Wow. That is so true. Let's end on this note, get ready to end. How do you feel with? I loved like the feelings of Jupiter moving into Pisces, and we had that for a little bit, and growing, right? Growing things. How do you feel with Jupiter moving into Pisces?
Well, I think, well, what Jupiter moving into Pisces is doing is preparing for its conjunction with Neptune.
Mm.
And so Jupiter and Neptune will both be in Pisces and both be in you know, that last sign of the zodiac, which has a lot to do with a sense of, I guess Jupiter in Pisces would be on the best levels to understanding the affect of images and imagination on us. Like, we can use all these images that are out there. When Neptune went into Pisces, you know, Instagram and all those things started, we were just flooded with images. Many images, we don't actually even know what images are doing to us.
No, we don't.
With Jupiter going into Pisces and moving towards that wonderful conjunction with Neptune, we're going to be able to, I feel, understand more the impact of imagination, the impact of the psychic resonances that we carry, the sense of moving towards a greater concept and education around these great arts that we have that move us, that inspire us.
Wow.
So let's not forget too that so Jupiter and Neptune move towards that conjunction next year. And Jupiter-Neptune conjunction does speak in Pisces of a great hope, doesn't it? And the great hope is to save that which has actually been depleted. But that can never happen unless we have everyone on board. And that's what I always lament, is that not everyone's getting on board with this. We're still being very, very individual. And Neptune and Pisces is teaching us that we're not. We're all connected in this huge web. And if we don't get that together, then we are going to actually deplete every resource available to us.
Wow. I'm taking that all in. I'm taking all that. That's all happening in my house of marriage. So here we go. Round number three.
what degree is your Mars in Pisces?
One degree.
Oh, one. Okay.
What do you think about that? Can you just give me...
I just laugh when you say one. So is your descendant Pisces as well?
Yep. And my ascendant, my ascendant is Virgo.
Oh, yeah. So you have Mars. You have an angular Mars.
Yeah. So what is that? Just tell me what your take on that.
Oh, well, when I said that, what I was thinking about is your, you know, like the way you described getting your podcast done, getting out there, doing things. You know, it was like, you know, like you were so active before trying to get the relationship work done that, you know, you're just a tremendously active and what's the word? Forceful individual. But when you turn those forces onto your own creative self, onto your own individuality, then you really started getting things done. That's what I was thinking about.
Wow. You know, wow. So instead of putting that force and that sort of onto the relationships and trying to get that done, I took that and put it into myself.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's going to be one of the lessons I'm here for, maybe then too, is to stop maybe putting so much force in the outside thing and just put more into myself and my creations.
Yes, I look at you. Just show up in a relationship and you'll change it, because the Mars in Pisces is a kind of, you know, it's like it's a role model for someone who is imaginative. You know, like, you know, you probably were drawn to the more creative types who actually then proved to actually not be able to do much.
Oh my God, yes.
You had to see it outside yourself so that, you know, you could find it in an appropriate way in yourself, so to speak.
Oh my God, yes. I wish you were still doing readings. I wish you were. That was awesome. So I feel like after I read, just so you know, hopefully you'll be on board after I read a few more of your books, I need to have you on here. Like, it, you know, it's almost 50 minutes. We're at the end now, but yeah, I'm like, I feel like I hope if you would come back again throughout down the road.
Oh, well, of course. It's been fun. It's been great.
Been so fun. Your knowledge, and you just are you're so knowledgeable. Now, again, so you are still teaching classes online and everything, just for the listeners?
I don't teach classes online. I do a lot of seminars. So let's see, my next, I just finished a whole couple weekends for the Faculty of Astrological Studies in England. We looked at the outer planets and the inner planets when they meet in the horoscope and also by transit. And then I just finished a four-part series at the Jung Society on time. And then my next one, I'm going to do the cycle of Mercury for the London School of Astrology. That's,
When's that?
In September. And then something I call the Zodiac, which is looking at the animals of the Zodiac. And that's also coming up. And then I'll do a classes on synastry in October with the Astrology University. So there's many schools that I'm teaching. I'm more of a roamer now rather than staying in one classroom. I roam around.
Well, your Mercury is loving that. Gemini rising.
Mercury loves it.
It's moving around. So do you have that on your website? So if people want to look that, if I want to find it,
I don't put it on the website, but I have a newsletter. I usually put the newsletters out with those that information.
Oh, good, good, good. I'm going to make sure that I am subscribed to that. Now tell our listeners your website one more time and anything else you want to say about your books, anything.
No, I appreciate that, Colleen. Thank you so much. It's astrosynthesis.com.au. And I tell all my students that I wrote the books later in my life because that was part of my retirement package. So I try to guilt them into buying the books for my retirement package.
Everyone buy the books. I'm telling you, I can't wait to get all of them. I'm going to post a list, of everyone going to my social media with all the books. So if you're listening to this and you didn't catch some of the ones that were talked about, check me out, on Instagram at the Hair Healer 1111. And I will have a list of the books of his books on there, too. And in the show notes.
Colleen, may your Saturn in Capricorn treat you well and, and structure that creative force of yours and go for it.
I am. Thank you. This has been amazing. I mean, I'm serious. I wanted to keep going. This was so good. This was such a good first interview back after my summer break. And oh my God, I feel so jazzed, so ready with you. Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you
it's a pleasure. Pleasure meeting you, Colleen. And thank you. Thank you for supporting me. And to all your listeners, this is great. You're doing a great job. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Brian Clark. Thank you, everyone, for listening and checking out the Weekly Awakening Podcast. Have a fabulous week. Thank you and goodbye.